This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The recent coal ash spill at the Dan River Power Plant, operated by Duke Energy, dumped approximately 40,000 tons of coal ash and 27 million gallons of contaminated water into the Dan River. Duke discovered the leak when a security guard noticed the water level in a holding pond was getting low. It took the utility three attempts to plug a leaking pipe. Shortly thereafter, concerns were raised about the integrity of a second pipe under that same coal ash dump, which Duke insists is sound. Still, the company has characterized this incident as a game changer with respect to how it will continue to manage coal ash ponds. Speaking to concerned citizens in Danville, Virginia, Paul Newton, North Carolina president for Duke Energy, said, "There are norms out there in the industry, but we are going to look at them differently as a result of this spill." It's important to note something else about the norms surrounding coal ash. The substance is unregulated and not classified as hazardous, but contains arsenic, cadmium, and chromium. And the Dan River, into which this spill occurred, is a source of drinking water for Danville. Though Duke insists that the water is safe, at least one reporter claims seeing dead turtles on the banks of the river, and the Environmental Protection Agency is testing both the water and sediment in the river for contaminants. Recently, CNN reported that tests since the spill have turned up higher levels of harmful chemicals such as arsenic in the river. This hour, we look at the implications of the spill to future regulation and to what may happen at the 30 other coal ash ponds that Duke Energy has scattered throughout the state. Historically, the electric power industry has argued against regulation of these coal ash ponds, saying such regulation would increase costs. But now, Duke Energy is faced with the prospect of a massive cleanup, and the question becomes, how much will that cost, and who will foot the bill? The Charlotte Observer reports, by the way, this morning, that Duke Energy customers will not pay the bill for cleaning up the coal ash-contaminated Dan River. CEO Lynn Good said on Tuesday, "We will analyze the financial implications. We'll work with our insurers, and we will be accountable for this." I guess that means shareholders will be accountable for this. We're joined this hour by Frank Holloman, senior attorney at the Southern Environmental Law Center in Chapel Hill. He is a former official for the U.S. Department of Justice and former U.S. Deputy Secretary of Education. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us.
Sam Perkins is the Catawba River Keeper. His organization has been following this story closely, and their website presents an excellent timeline of events following the discovery of the spill. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And we'll be joined later on by Amy Adams, not that one, the other one, not the actress, but Amy Adams is the North Carolina campaign coordinator with Appalachian Voices. She is on her way and got stuck behind an accident on 77 South, but she'll be here shortly. Let's start with the basics, really basic. What is coal ash?
Well, the basic problem we're facing is this, is that when you burn coal to make electricity, as Duke has been doing in North Carolina for decades, you're left with an ash. And that ash contains lots of toxic substances, including arsenic. And in fact, it's getting more toxic because we're better at removing the contaminants from the air. And what Duke has done for decades and is insisting on continuing doing today is, believe it or not, it stores that ash, toxic ash, in unlined pits next to our waterways, held back only by earthen dams that leak. And as any person can see, you don't have to be an engineer to see this, that is a recipe for disaster. And the disaster, most recent disaster, occurred at Dan River.
Right.
Fortunately, there is a very simple solution, and the solution is being implemented just south of where we're sitting here today in Charlotte in South Carolina. There are three major utilities that serve the two Carolinas, Duke and two in South Carolina. The two in South Carolina have agreed to clean up their coal ash lagoons for this very reason, for the danger, because they're illegal, because they pollute, and because they're bad for their local communities and a bad risk for the utilities.
And Duke hasn't done so.
And Duke is the only one of the three. Well, that's a good question. I've got to think that as they focus on it, Duke will reach the conclusion it's good for Duke as well as their communities to change, but I think it's just bureaucratic inertia.
I need to point out that because all of the guests on today's program are from various different environmental concerns, we invited Duke Energy to join us on this program to send a representative. They declined, but they did send this. They say, we take responsibility for the event and are taking another look at all of our ash management practices across the fleet. Before this event, our focus was on closing ash basins at the 7 recently retired coal plants in North Carolina, and the Dan River plant is one of those retired plants. This remains a high priority, they say, and we will work through those steps with regulatory and legislative input to ensure our decisions protect the environment and our communities. I also want to point out that what Duke has been doing over the years is completely legal.
No, it isn't.
No?
No. Every one of Duke's coal ash lagoons in North Carolina violates state or federal or both clean water laws. And North Carolina's state regulator has said so under oath. So there is no specific federal law on how you store the ash, but if you choose to store it in this very dangerous, risky way, mm-hmm. you have to comply with the Clean Water Act, state and federal, and these sites do not and have not, including Dan River.
Sam. Duke has long claimed that they follow all state and federal laws, and the key state laws they're violating are the groundwater laws. Duke itself has said these are carefully calculated concentrations for a number of elements, arsenic, cobalt, manganese, and a number of others. And every single one of their sites in the groundwater has exceedances of those groundwater standards. And then as far as the federal laws are concerned, they have unpermitted discharges. The Clean Water Act was great in cleaning up waterways because it said, if you discharge water, it needs to be in a permit. There needs to be a monitoring protocol. And they have engineered at their sites, most of them, discharges because these ponds are unlined and they leak. And so they've created the culverts to get them into these drinking water reservoirs. So on neither front can they say that they're in full compliance. They haven't necessarily had a good state agency to enforce the law against them.
And remember, Mike, the United States government has convened a federal grand jury, the Department of Justice, to look into a suspected felony. We don't know what that felony is. We don't know who they're looking at. But that combined with what North Carolina's regulatory agency has found under oath does not make you feel comfortable the laws are being
one of you. I read a lot about this yesterday, so I don't know which one of you supplied this information, but somebody pointed out that when you throw a banana peel into your trash and the trash man comes and picks it up and takes it to the landfill is lined so that the residue of the banana peel doesn't leak into the groundwater. But these coal ash pits, which contain all these really bad chemicals, are not lined and do leak into the groundwater and potentially into drinking water reservoirs.
Yeah.
That sounds insane to me.
It is insane. And Diener has been allowing.
Diener is the department.
Diener is a state regulatory agency.
Department of Environmental and Natural Resources.
In North Carolina, is supposed to protect all of us. Diener has been allowing, has not been enforcing the law vigorously. And as a result, Duke has been able to continue to store this coal ash in unlined pits that pollute.
And, the problem, I think, is just also the culture, especially when we saw a turnover at Diener. Skvarla, the secretary, and Reeder, the head of Division of Water Resources, have repeatedly said that their customers, the people they're serving, are these companies, basically the polluters, and not the people in North Carolina. And there was a really concerning—
Is that a recent stance, or has that been going on for—
Oh, that's been going on since they first came into Diener.
So it's not a Republican versus Democratic administration stance. It is of the bureaucrats.
Well, starting with the recent group at Diener. Part of the problem, the groundwater monitoring data wasn't even public record until a few years ago. But I think the most concerning thing that's been said, straight up saying that they don't have the interest of the people of North Carolina in mind. Secretary Skvarla said he had a eureka moment as he pondered the contaminated wells in the state. And he said, everybody thinks the government must solve this. But he said, putting the solution in place is your individual responsibility. He told people And this is from, he was at a Chamber of Commerce event up in Salisbury. He told people that if there is contamination from another company, it is their individual responsibility to get their wells checked and to get a filter if they need to, and that they need to bear the cost. That's the sort of culture that we're dealing with.
And that's been going on for how long, that point of view?
About at least a year now, although I will say.
So it is the switchover from the Democratic to Republican control of the legislature and the governor's office.
Well,
is that what you're saying?
I will say these statements, this culture has come out with the new administration.
Will this leak change that culture?
It's got to. I mean, if a catastrophic spill like we had at Dan River and a federal grand jury will not change your attitude and will not change your game plan, what will? I want to emphasize.
Is it catastrophic, given the fact that so far, as we know, the drinking water is safe? Although I'm told the Observer reports that at the location of the spill, the coal ash is about 5 feet deep in that water.
Yeah, and I mean, they found ash 70 miles downstream in the Carr Lake. And I think the thing to emphasize with regard to the Dan River spill, which is not in the Catawba River Basin, is that we got lucky there. That's a relatively small site, and that was a relatively small spill. It is still, in and of itself, a disaster. But, you know, setting the scene in Charlotte, we have 5 billion gallons of coal ash over 445 acres in a 29-mile span of the Catawba around Charlotte. That's on Lake Norman, Mountain Island Lake, and Lake Wylie, all three of which serve as drinking water reservoirs for ultimately more than a million people. So you've got 5 billion gallons of coal ash around Charlotte. Dan River only had 216 million gallons. They only had 39 acres.
Yeah.
So we've got an order of magnitude more storage piled up twice as high here around Charlotte. So the catastrophe would make West Virginia look like small potatoes as far as the ensuing drinking water crisis, were we to have one.
And Frank, you've called this 13 more disasters waiting to happen. You report that Duke Energy is storing 2.7 million tons of coal ash in unlined pits on top of Mountain Island Lake, which is where Charlotte gets its drinking water. Why are these coal ash ponds located near bodies of water, and particularly reservoirs for drinking water?
Well, it was simple, unthinking convenience and expense. In other words, you build to generate electricity from coal, you need two things. You need coal and you need water. So they built these plants next to waterways so they could pull the water out of the waterway to generate steam. After they burned the coal, they had ash. Instead of transporting that ash to a safe line landfill, as you say we have to do with our tomato peelings and our banana peels, they instead just dug holes in the ground and slurry this coal ash in wet form into these unlined holes. Over the years, it's no news that these things are dangerous and that they pollute. That's been known, and over the years, utilities have looked at it, but they've just decided, well, till somebody makes us do it, we're just going to continue to follow this old pattern.
And I have 20 seconds. Why are they being stored in water? Why isn't this ash dry and covered?
Because it was cheaper and easier to slurry it through a ditch or a pipe than to truck it. And number two, of course, water and storm and rain and stormwater go into the pits.
Frank Holloman's the senior attorney for the Southern Environmental Law Center. Sam Perkins is also with us, the Catawba Riverkeeper. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the professional MBA program at USC's Darla Moore School of Business. Convenient location in Uptown Charlotte. Details at moore.sc.edu/PMBA. And Signature Healthcare, celebrating 10 years of offering concierge medical care, providing patients with 24/7 physician access, personalized executive healthcare, and same-day appointments. 704-554-8787. Well, landscape architect Gary Smith has designed major gardens all over the country, and his work celebrates the relationship between people and plants. His next project is going to be to design a children's space at Daniel Stowe Botanical Gardens called the Lost Hollow. It's a medieval garden. I'm not sure what that is. what we'll find out when Gary Smith joins us tomorrow to talk about that, his approach to landscape architecture, and more tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Syrian government steps up its use of barrel bombs against civilians. The conflict there has already killed 140,000 and displaced 500,000 more. The crisis in Syria and the world's failed response.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. Mike Collins are talking about the coal ash spill on the Dan River from the Duke Energy plant that had been decommissioned up in that area, and about the coal ash problem throughout the state, because it could pose future problems. We're having this conversation with Frank Holloman, who's senior attorney for the Southern Environmental Law Center in Chapel Hill. Sam Perkins is the Catawba River Keeper, and Amy Adams joins us now. She is the North Carolina campaign coordinator with Appalachian Voices, an environmental advocacy group. She previously worked with the North Carolina Department of Environmental and Natural Resources as regional supervisor of the Surface Water Protection Section in the Washington Regional Office. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And I want to point out that because all of these guests come from various different environmental organizations, we did ask Duke Energy to send a representative. They declined and sent a statement that I read in the last segment about taking responsibility for this event. And that's also been in the pages of the Charlotte Observer this morning, and I'm probably on WFAE News about their working to do the cleanup, and that the cost will be incurred by them and not by ratepayers. You, Amy, went so far as to go to the site, I'm told, and put your hand in the water and pull out a bunch of coal ash.
Yes.
This stuff contains a lot of nasty stuff. Why did you feel compelled to put your bare hand in there?
Probably not the wisest decision I've made, but I was overwhelmed when I got to the Danville intake and started looking at the amount of ash that was in the water column. And there was this log that was floating by, and as I pulled it up, you could tell that it was just completely coated. It was oozing with coal ash, and my first instinct was to put my hand on it and go, well, how much is here?
Okay.
What does this really look like?
Does it just look like mud, sludge? Does it smell? What does it feel like? Does it stick to your hands? Can you easily get it off? Tell me about it.
Right. All the way down in Danville, what you had was the very, very fine particles, because we're talking about 23 river miles from where the discharge location was.
And that's where you were?
That's where I was in Danville.
Okay.
So by the time the ash had gotten there, it was the very fine suspended particles that were left. Had you put your hand in the water closer to Eden, you would have had more grit to it. It would have been some of the heavier particles that had fallen out earlier. We learned yesterday from U.S. Fish and Wildlife that there are a couple of bars, like sandbars, of coal ash very close to the spill location that are as much as 5 feet deep across the bottom of the river. And, of course, that amount varies. It's not 5 feet deep all the way 70 miles, but close to the spill, it is quite a massive amount of sediment. So closer to the spill, it has a more gritty feel to it. Down in Danville, the closest thing that I can describe is what it felt like is that if you poured chocolate syrup, Hershey's chocolate syrup, in your hands, that's about the consistency. Mm. It's smooth, it's thick, it covers everything, and you could put your hands back in the water and it would just very easily resuspend straight, right into the water column.
Let me emphasize, by the way, as far as the skin contact issue. There is still, I checked yesterday, the Department of Health and Human Services still has an advisory out to not have contact with the water, to certainly not to eat anything out of it. And that's something that's still out and issued. And I think it's not necessarily just because of the metals and the coal ash itself. These ponds have always been permitted to receive a lot of other industrial waste chemicals, lab waste, boiler slag. It's in their permits. People can look it up. So there's a lot here that's not even being tested for.
So this is the source of drinking water for Danville, Virginia. Are they worried about the water? Are people drinking the water? Does a water cleaning process take all these contaminants out in the course of just normal cleansing of the water? What's the story there?
Well, again, I think we got lucky in that, compared to what this would be almost anywhere else in the state, this was a relatively small spill, although the arsenic levels at the intake were still very elevated. But it was sufficient what the plant had to be able to remove that much.
Tom Reeder, who is the head of the Water Resources Division of the North Carolina Department of Environmental and Natural Resources, has said that the real problem with this spill is not the short-term exceedances of water quality standards, which is what we're seeing now, but figuring out what is happening at the bottom of the Dan River.
If you're some sort of a mobile species, like a mollusk or a snail or your plant or something like that, and you're buried under coal ash, yeah, you're going to die. I mean, that's the big problem from this coal ash spill. Things that couldn't get out of the way as this material settled out of the water and deposited on the river bottom, on the bottom of the Dan River there, downstream of the spill site, it's probably dead. So our job now is to figure out where that deposition occurred, how extensive it is, how far down the river it went. So the only way we could start trying to remediate the water, the long-term health of the dam, is to remove those deposits or cover them with dirt or something else like that, whatever we come up with, to try to somehow mitigate the impact of those depositions downstream in the dam.
Now, that was several days ago, so they've probably made some progress here. But how long does something like that take to determine? How long does it take to clean it up? And can we assume that the river is safe, or the water is safe, except for the sediment at the bottom and particularly around the location of the spill?
Mike, I think he's, if I could make this one point, I think Mr. Reeder has missed the big point. The big point from this spill really is, let's not have another one. I mean, we want to clean this one up, and he's right, the sediments are the issue, big issue, in the Dan River. But what we should be focusing on the most, let's not ever do this again. Mm-hmm. And the way to do that is for Diener and Mr. Reeder's agency to require Duke Energy to do what's being done in South Carolina. Let's move this ash away from these waterways, out of these dangerous pits to safe, dry landfill storage, again, just the way all of us have to store our waste.
But I want to go back to what Tom Reeder said, because before you convince people to spend that kind of money to do that, you've got to convince them that there's a problem from the first spill. I mean, if it clears up and it goes away and no one's hurt except for a couple of mollusks, then who cares? That's going to be the opinion of a lot of people. So he goes back and he says that whatever we come up with, we have to somehow figure out how to mitigate the impact of those depositions, the depositions downstream from the Dan in the Dan River. Figure out, I mean, if we have these coal ash ponds unlined and posing a danger, why isn't there a plan in place already to clean it up quickly?
Well, that is one thing I asked for, and I think another problem is that it's spread over 70 miles, and it's still very thick downstream. But here's the long-term problem. We actually have the situation happening on Mountain Island Lake in Charlotte. When you have it down on the bottom, you're not going to be able to get it all up. And you're going to continue to have – there are geochemical processes that will allow a lot of those things on the bottom to release back up into the water column. And in Charlotte, on Mountain Island Lake, because of what's been allowed to go in to the lake, both permitted and what's not been allowed to go into the lake from unpermitted discharges from Riverbend, we have documented releases, kind of eruptions of arsenic out of the sediment – even by Charlotte's drinking water intake, up into the water column. And in fact, what Charlotte removes from the drinking water as far as sediment and sludge that they typically apply on farm fields, they've had trouble, as well as Gastonia and Mount Holly, keeping that legal. There is a legal limit for the amount of arsenic you can have and what's removed for spreading out on farm fields.
If this water is contaminated by this leak and any other leak, would we know of the health effects, the deleterious, I can't even say it, the bad side effects of this to your health?
I don't think so, because I don't think they're testing for everything they need to. They're not testing for PCBs. They're not testing for the industrial waste chemicals.
But I guess the question, when would you know, as an individual who's drunk the water and who may be being negatively affected by it, would this show up next week, next month, or 15 years from now?
It's a chronic exposure issue in cases like this, which I think is scarier than anything.
Well, the reason we have these standards, the whole reason we have them is we've determined scientifically and as a community that it's not safe to be exposed to certain levels of materials. And as we know, serious illnesses like cancer are caused by the interaction of different substances over a period of a lifetime. Mm-hmm. We can't point to Mike or Fred got sick from this necessarily, but we know it's not good. That's why we have the standards in place.
What has been the reaction of local elected officials, not just in the Dan River area, but in all areas affected by – that have a coal ash pond in their municipality or near theirs, like such as Charlotte and Belmont. What has been the reaction?
I think a lot of the elected officials were taken by surprise, even though they knew they had this coal ash pond upstream from their drinking water intake. I think there's always the mentality that it can't happen here.
Mm-hmm.
You hear about things happening in other locations, and when it happens here, you know, suddenly you have an emotional attachment to it. You made the statement, you know, it's some mollusk, who cares? Or it's just some turtles that are crawling up out of the bank, who cares? And I want to speak to that.
But they're the canaries in the coal mine.
They are.
Yes.
And I would like to speak to that. You know, just days after being on the Dan River, I was back home visiting family on the shores of the Pamlico, which is where I grew up. And I feel very connected to that river. It's where I learned to swim. It's where I learned to fish. It's where I learned to sail. It's where I learned to handle a boat. And I thought for a moment, what if that spill had happened on what I consider my river,
mm-hmm.
the river I grew up
mm-hmm.
on? And then suddenly I thought, there are people that feel like that about the Dan. That is their river. They grew up swimming and fishing and canoeing. So there is a very emotional response to this that's in the local population.
The Catawba is our river, and you're the mm-hmm. Catawba River Keeper. What would have happened had that spill occurred here on Mountain Island Lake or out in the Belmont area, because they get their drinking water from a different source, but it too has a coal ash pond near it.
Right. Again, more than a million people on the three lakes around Charlotte get their drinking water from around and downstream of these coal ash ponds. And so it would have been a crisis. You know, to put it in perspective, West Virginia was 300,000 people affected. Mountain Island Lake alone would affect 860,000 people. And then Lake Norman, you've got Mooresville, Lincoln County, you have a much smaller Charlotte-Mecklenburg intake. Down on Lake Wylie, you've got Belmont, you've got Rock Hill. I think one thing to emphasize is that we all live downstream of something and someone. So as far as how Charlotte would have reacted, that's unfortunately not something we can get a hold of for security reasons and the Patriot Act and so forth. But it would have been a major crisis.
The head of Charlotte-Mecklenburg Water System said if there was a spill at Mountain Island Lake, it would be, quote, completely uncontrollable. That's what he told the Charlotte Observer before the Dan River spill happened.
Wow. Some have criticized Duke Energy for the time it took to tell people that this spill was going on. I think it was 24 hours before they released that information, although I believe they were under no obligation to release that information at the time. And then it took them three attempts to plug this leaky pipe, and they had trouble reaching that pipe. And Duke has sent a statement saying that we installed a permanent plug in the pipe and the flow to the river stopped on February 8th. However, we have much work to do. In addition to work continuing at the site, we and experts from other agencies continue monitoring water quality. Environmental monitoring teams are assessing sediment, fish, and other aquatic species to determine what steps are needed to take care of the river. Let's go back, however, to the pipe. Duke says it was surprised to learn that the pipe was made of corrugated metals, because as I understand it, the portion of the pipe that you can see is made of cement. What was the purpose of the pipe? The pipe had no connection, really, to the coal ash pond, did it?
Actually, it did.
Okay.
And this is what was confusing in first reports. There are two stormwater pipes that run under these coal ash lagoons. First, it was a very dumb idea to build a coal ash lagoon on top of a stormwater pipe. But these stormwater pipes remove the stormwater that would gather at the back of the lagoons and would otherwise threaten the integrity of the dikes or threaten to overflow the lagoons.
Right.
And it takes that water then directly to the river. They could have gone around the dikes instead of going under mm-hmm. the lagoon. So this was really an essential part of the operation of the lagoon.
And when you say they,
Duke Energy.
Was it Duke Energy, or is this a plant they bought when they bought
Progress?
No,
this was part of Old Duke, okay. Not Old Progress. This
How could
part
it be
Old
then
Duke.
That they were surprised to discover it?
That is a very good question, because had they been doing adequate inspections, they should have been certainly inspecting this pipe.
And I think it brings in the question, what else don't they know? Where else have corners been cut? Because Duke has had a good reputation.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee Valley Authority, when the Kingston disaster happened in 2008, did not necessarily have the best reputation. And so I think it really calls into question what Duke can vouch for as far as the safety and structural integrity of these old sites.
And so the problem is twofold, that the fact that they were surprised by a corrugated pipe being under the coal ash pond and the fact that it's under the coal ash pond. Had the pipe been concrete from start to finish, would there be a problem?
We don't know the answer to that because it still would have been under pressure for years by being under on top of a coal ash, and, under a coal ash lagoon.
And the 48-inch pipe failed. They have a 36-inch pipe.
That's
where,
the second pipe.
That's the second pipe. Mm-hmm. And it looks like reinforced concrete all the way up. And there are pressurized jets coming through from the pressure of those ponds being on top of it. They're leaking. And Duke has still responded that they don't think there's a problem with those.
You have characterized, Sam, you've characterized North Carolina, and particularly Charlotte, and this is pretty scary, as the coal ash capital of the United States.
Yeah.
With 4 of 44 EPA high-hazard ponds in a 20-mile span of river, the state has 12 of the 44 on the list. How did we get so lucky?
Well, you know, it's interesting. This region, actually, going through GIS and some other data, it looks like we have the highest density of just general thermoelectric power production. So that's coal or nuclear. We have 5 power plants. 3 of those are coal-fired within only a 20-mile radius. Mm-hmm. And so there's only one other place in the nation you find that, and that's actually around Detroit on Lake Erie. And there, it's not stacked up on one channel with a lot of people drinking the water immediately below all of those points.
I've received an email in advance of this program from a man named Adam who wants to know, given the environmental damage wrought by the TVA's Kingston disaster in 2008, which you've already referenced, and the fact that Belmont's G.G. Allen Steam Station coal ash pond was rated as a high-risk area by state inspectors, should Charlottians be concerned about potentially dangerous situation in their own backyard? I think we've probably already answered that question. Yes?
Yes, I grew up in a small town, and there was an old saying there that there's no education in the second kick of a mule. And we learned from the TVA disaster that these are dangerous, outmoded ways to store our ash.
How is it possible that coal ash, which has been around for a long time, has gone unregulated and is not considered hazardous material by the EPA when it clearly contains toxins that can make you very sick and kill you? How is it possible?
Well, you know, that's a great question. It's one of the things that if you look at all the individual components, they're all hazardous waste, but somehow when they get combined into coal ash, they're considered non-hazardous.
Well, because this is not just a Duke Energy problem. This is happening all over the country with electric power utilities.
This is a nationwide problem, absolutely.
Where has the EPA been in all of this?
Well, this illustrates the problem. It's Washington gridlock. That's why we...
But gridlock hasn't been going on for 90 years. These coal ash ponds have been around for a long time.
Right. The issue's been a focus for 30 years. I mean, it's been known and disputed for 30 years, but the utilities have lots of money. They hire lots of lobbyists. They make lots of political contributions, and it is very hard to get any effective regulation out of Washington. That's why we have to do it locally. We've got to convince, as in South Carolina, convince Duke to do the right thing here.
I know that Sam Perkins wants to chime in on this. I'll give you an opportunity to do just that after the break. We have to take one right now, as a matter of fact, and we'll be back to talk more about this coal ash situation here and around the Carolinas in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and 123NC.com, providing North Carolina with instant access to online criminal records for almost 2 decades. Criminal records can be searched instantly online at 123NC.com. And Blumenthal Performing Arts presenting Rock of Ages, the arena rock love story with hits by Journey, Styx, REO Speedwagon, and many more, Friday through Sunday, Belk Theater. Tickets at 704-372-1000. The Syrian government steps up its use of barrel bombs against civilians. The conflict there has already killed 140,000 people and displaced 500,000 more. Diane Rehm and her panel will talk about the crisis in Syria and the world's failed response in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. If you have something to say about the topic that we're talking about, and that is coal ash and the coal ash spill, WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks is a great place to start. We're coming right back.
They're kind of a bureaucratic rite of passage. Random background noises, technical difficulties, everybody just talking over each other. And yet, we all go along.
I thought it was just a really interesting topic that a lot of people endure on a regular basis, but no one really talks about it outside of work.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. The Modern Conference Call next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, sitting here with Amy Adams, North Carolina Campaign Coordinator for Appalachian Voices. Sam Perkins is the Catawba Riverkeeper, and Frank Holloman is a senior attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center. We're talking about the coal ash spill on the Dan River from a Duke Energy coal ash pond. Duke Energy was invited to join us on this program. They declined, but they did send a statement, parts of which I have been reading, saying that they take responsibility for the event and are taking another look at all of their coal ash management practices across the fleet. Drinking water, they say, has been safe throughout the Dan River event. Water sampling data also demonstrates the Dan River has returned to pre-event water quality conditions. I'm sure that some of you can take issue with that. But, Sam, I want to let you follow up on something that Frank Holloman was saying just before the break.
Well, if they want to take responsibility, they'll change their behavior, which is the storage of these ponds. And we were talking about these ponds and how have they gone unregulated. And I think one reason these are kind of quiet ticking time bombs is that they don't smell like a landfill. And they're, from the perspective of the lake, they're relatively well disguised. When you come up to these, I mean, these things are as high as 130 feet high, the way they're piled up above the landscape. And they're pretty steep. But there aren't a whole lot of places where you have a clearing in the trees where you can easily see them. So there are people on Mountain Island Lake who have gone there for years and never knew there were ash ponds there, even though those dikes are 80 feet high. And so they're very well hidden, and it's been kind of that quiet problem that's never been dealt with. So the EPA never really said, we're going to give you this low designation as far as safety for waste handling. They just never gave them a designation at all.
Given coal ash storage standards, and I assume there are some, are there?
Well, the main standards are now they have to comply with the clean water laws, which they do not do.
Okay, so given the standards, was this spill preventable or was it inevitable?
It was preventable had they simply done what's being done in South Carolina, and that is move the ash to safe-line landfills away from the waterways, just like municipal trash. With the ash being stored the way it is, we have been saying for months before this ever occurred that we could expect to have a catastrophe like this in North Carolina, and we did not want to be proven right, but unfortunately we have been.
And this wasn't Duke's first failure. Let me emphasize that. Now, this was what looks like the third largest coal ash failure in the nation, but looking at engineering reports I went through, they've got thousands of pages that are part of public record. It looks like about 9 of their 14 sites have had some sort of at least small failure. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, these were kind of the warning signs leading up, and, I mean, you know, they failed. These things inevitably fail.
And, Mike, they're aging out. A lot of them were built in the 50s, 60s, 70s. Even if they weren't that good then, but now they are really aging out their useful life.
Gerald on email says you can go to Google Earth or your favorite map program and look at the storage pond on Mountain Island Lake. It's just a few miles upstream from the intake for Charlotte's water supply. Mike in Charlotte writes, it seems like a lot of discussion is reactionary towards Duke, but in reality, the customer is in charge. We're the ones using the energy. It's up to the people to change the way we use power. Don't just get mad at Duke. I don't think we've been mad at Duke. I think we're just trying to have an intellectual conversation about this. But is the customer really in charge?
Yeah, well,
it's a monopoly.
No, not really, because the customer, no matter how much you turn down your thermostat, you're not in control of what they do with the ash. Let me say that. I want to emphasize, a lot of great people work at Duke. Duke Energy does a lot of great things. We're just saying for some reason they are stuck on a bad policy on coal ash that other utilities in our community have rejected. For example, you mentioned the Catawba River. Just south of the border on the Catawba Watery River, SCNG is removing coal ash from lagoons that are very similar to those at Mountain
Lake. How much is that costing them?
Well, we don't know the answer. Santee Cooper, we know, one, they have not raised their rates to deal with it. Secondly, we know it can be spread over a period of years. Third, we know Santee Cooper, which is doing it too, they say they hope to actually break even or maybe make money.
Because they're selling it.
They're using it for recycling for production of cement and wallboard. And
you
in
could
fact,
put, you could put hazardous toxic waste into wallboard and cement. Do you want that in your house?
You can put, according to the EPA and state authorities, you can use coal ash to help make cement.
But cadmium, which is one of the byproducts of coal ash, is radioactive.
It can be. I think those are reasonable questions. Right. And cobalt is radioactive, and uranium is, too.
All right. you used to, Amy, you used to work, you used to be with the North Carolina Department of Environmental and Natural Resources, and some very bad things have been said about them on this program today. Did you leave of your own accord, and if so, why?
I did. I left late last year. And it was mostly due to some changes that I had seen since the new administration had taken over in early 2013. The new administration being John Scavarla, the department secretary, and Tom Reeder, the director. We saw some pretty significant things happen with the regulatory agency in 2013. And I think one of the biggest ones was the Regulatory Reform Act, which said the state of North Carolina is going to sit down and look at all of its regulations, which in and of itself doesn't sound like that bad of an idea. But what they started with, what they targeted, was our water and wetland regulations, which are arguably some of our strongest. They have the most influence over development and growth, and they rightfully should be some of our strongest. Those are the rules that protect our water sources, but those were the rules that were first targeted to be reevaluated as their necessity and their service anymore to the state. We also saw a lot of budget cuts. Mm-hmm. We saw the reorganization of the department. We saw the General Assembly try to limit DENR's ability to regulate groundwater by moving the compliance boundary.
Weakening it,
mm-hmm. Moving the compliance boundary further away from a potential groundwater contamination source. And we also saw legislation that would try and limit local government's ability to enact its own environmental regulatory rules.
So earlier in this conversation, I think before mm-hmm. you arrived, Sam Perkins mentioned that someone at DENR, or maybe it was you, Frank, said that their customer was not the people of South Carolina. It was the industries of South Carolina.
It was the industries. John Scavarla was very instrumental in redefining who our customer was and making customer service a very prominent piece of what we did. And so, you know, he wasn't only saying we need to be better at customer service, but we need to be better at serving the industries that we regulate.
In an article about this bill in the Charlotte Business Journal, North Carolina Republican Representative Bill Brawley from Mecklenburg County was quoted as saying that we need to find a balance between corporate and environmental concerns, and that the bottom line, is this a quote, the bottom line is we're not going to run Duke Power out of business. Well, that shouldn't be the goal, should it? I mean, there's a happy medium to be struck here. Is there
here, what we're advocating for is good for Duke Energy. Duke Energy now is going to have to spend huge quantities of money to deal with the spill at Dan River. They could have spent a small fraction of that and cleaned up those lagoons. They're dealing with a federal criminal grand jury. Nobody wants these kind of things to happen to our community or to Duke. It's a good investment for Duke, just as for South Carolina's utilities.
In the aftermath of this spill, Duke Energy has said that they will now reevaluate what have been industry norms on how coal ash deposits are handled. So, Amy, do you see an opportunity here for a major North Carolina company to set new national standards in dealing with this problem?
The opportunity is there, and I certainly, you know, I for one hope that Duke steps up and becomes a leader in leading the rest of the state, or the rest of the nation, rather, in how to get away from storing coal ash in these unlined holes.
It is no secret that Republicans want to be seen as business friendly, and there's a lot to be said for that, because if you attract industry to a state, that brings with it, one presumes, jobs, and that raises the level of the economy, and it makes life better for all of us. Is it possible to strike a friendly balance between business interests and the environmental interests of the people of North Carolina?
Yeah, if I could just emphasize, coal ash is not partisan. It doesn't have any party label on it. In fact, Republican legislators from Asheville have said they want this ash moved. It is certainly possible to do a balance. In fact, it is good for our local community's business reputation not to be known as a site of a hazardous spill or a catastrophic coal ash spill. We want quality of life is what attracts businesses and retirees and improves the standard of living for everybody. So, and it protects Duke shareholders from another big bill.
And we're not putting Santee Cooper and SCENG out of business with the cleanups they've agreed to willingly down in South Carolina. And I think this is good. Shareholders should love a cleanup because it's removing a lot of risk and a lot of liability from Duke to get these things away.
George Everett, a Duke Energy representative, has said that the company will eventually close all of these ponds at the retired plants, but it is a long process and a lot of environmental concerns need to be satisfied. And they came up with a plan to do that, which is still awaiting approval, but it's a plan that they believe is solid. But the leak on the Dan River has made them reevaluate.
Because of this break in a pipe, last week we formed a new team that will conduct a review of all ash handling and storage facilities across our entire generation fleet, not just in the Carolinas. Simply put, we're taking another look at those plans.
Duke Energy's George Everett, is that a step in the right direction?
Mike, it's a good step, but here's the thing. The utilities in South Carolina are not having to form a committee to decide what to do. They're moving ash. I mean, Mr. Scavarla at Diener and Duke Energy, which has a lot of smart people, what is their reaction? We're going to form a committee. Well, you know, ash is being moved today off the banks of the Catawba River, just downstream of where we're sitting. But upstream of where we're sitting and downstream in North Carolina, it's not.
Why are SCENG and Santee Cooper doing it? What is their motivation for doing it?
All right. It removes risk from the company. Uh-huh. It ensures they're operating legally. It's good for the communities in which they operate, and it's good for their public reputation.
You know, Duke's – and I want to emphasize also that Duke is the largest utility in the nation, and this – I don't know what's left for them to evaluate, especially with their resources. And maybe the key takeaway for anything else people are going to hear on follow-up from Duke on this is that when they say closure, when they say cleanup, that has to be a removal of the ash from waterfront. It cannot be a capping and leaving in place.
But you know, where do they move it and how do they do it and how do they then store it? Because it's got to go someplace. Why can't it go back to the coal mines it came from? Decommissioned coal mines.
That can be bad too because remember, coal mines often have water flowing through them and they're not lined either.
So when you line an area that can contain this kind of weight and this kind of volume, what's the lifespan of the liner?
Well, that's a good question. It's not a perfect situation, but it's sure a heck of a lot better than an unlined pit in the ground. And
where
engineers can tell us the life of such.
Santee Cooper is selling their coal ash.
And landfilling.
And landfilling. SCENG is landfilling.
Correct. And also recycling.
How do we know that these new locations that they're moving this coal ash to will be any safer ultimately than where they are now?
Well, we know they're not on the banks of a waterway. The ash is stored dry and the landfill is lined. That's about 800 years better than what we currently have.
Barbara, a Charlotte native, emails, no water, no economy. Advocates and politicians need to realize that in the 21st century, water is our number one resource for life, business, and economic health and should be considered first in any policy. It isn't a matter of if, but when will our water be devastated. The cost to Duke Energy will be greater than getting it fixed now. Hugh emails, in the 80s, I worked for Westinghouse as a turbine generator factory representative. One day I was working at a coal-fired plant on the Carolina coast. A high executive of the company had come over from the company's nuclear plant nearby. He was wearing his nuclear plant dosimeter badge, which tracked his radiation exposure. The executive walked out in the coal ash yard to do an inspection. When he returned, he said his badge had maxed itself out for the year. The irony was that the coal plant was exposing him to more radiation than he would have seen at a nuclear plant. Given that, if that's true, how can they turn this material into cement and into wallboard?
I can tell you.
Is any government agency, have they looked into that?
They say the EPA and other safety agencies have approved it, and what they say is the cement process encapsulates the ash, and that makes it different from bad recycling where they just scattered it for a while on
road beds.
You have
to encapsulate radioactivity in lead, don't you?
Well, depending upon how much there is, it's possible.
Right.
I think it's a legitimate
also.
Concern. Yeah. We're just trying to get a better solution, find a better solution than what we have.
Sam.
Yeah, I mean, concrete gets used also as part of the encapsulation. But, I mean, I think the key is, you know, anything is going to be better than having this piled high like a toxic game of Jenga on drinking water reservoirs.
So I have 60 seconds. What needs to be done on the Dan River site right now?
Right now, we need to work on establishing how we're going to get the sediment out and protect the health of the river going forward. And certainly, we need a plan on what's going to happen with not just the pipe that we know leaks or did leak, but the second pipe. There is a seep. There is a third discharge that is discharging arsenic into the Dan River. We need a plan very quickly as to how we're going to remove that coal ash.
Given the risks that these ponds pose, will this light a fire to hasten the policy at Duke Energy, or will it light a fire under politicians to make them hasten their changeover?
You've got to believe that a federal grand jury and a catastrophic spill will get people's attention and will, as a Duke man said, be a game changer.
If they find evidence, used to be a federal prosecutor, if they find evidence of, or used to work for the Justice Department, if they find evidence of wrongdoing, who gets prosecuted?
Well, the government will either prosecute individuals and they risk jail time, or they prosecute companies which risk fines and convictions.
Frank Holloman's the senior attorney for the Southern Environmental Law Center. Amy Adams, North Carolina campaign coordinator of Appalachian Voices, an environmental concern group. And Sam Perkins, the Catawba Riverkeeper. Thank you all for the hour. Duke Energy was invited to join us. They declined.